Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Today, I am honored to introduce a special guest to the Bob Siegel Show, Dr. Christian Sabarino. Dr. Sabarino holds a PhD in physics from the University of California, San Diego, and teaches his science courses from a Christian perspective. He has been programming and using physics and calculus for over 20 years while working in government industry and academia. He has done much teaching in his career and in his church. He is also a Christian homeschool dad with two kids. He has been an adjunct professor with Lone Star College System. He is co-founder of Blockchain Partners in London, England. He is also a secondary school instructor in computer science, computer programming, mathematics, and natural science. He has done classified cryptography and networking software for the National Security Agency. He has also held various other technological positions over more than two decades in industry, government, the military, and academia, including Google, Qualcomm, and the U.S. Naval Warfare Systems Center. Boy, what a resume. I wonder if he also speaks two different languages and was ambassador to France. We'll have to ask him. Recently, he did give a controversial presentation at a tea party called A Scientific Approach to Climate. Chris Sabarino, welcome to our program.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Wow, what an impressive resume. I think most people are listening to that thinking, boy, it makes me feel like I've done nothing but sit around and watch TV my whole life.
And yes, and by the way, I do speak two languages. Yes, oh, yeah. I speak Portuguese also.
Oh, my God. Well, see, I was making a joke out of it, and here you do. You've never been ambassador to France, though, I assume.
No, never been ambassador.
Okay, well, it's too bad. We could probably use
but
you.
But I'm open to it, though.
You're open to it. Okay.
Yes.
You sound like the candidate who wants to run, so he goes out of his way to say, well, I'm not planning to run, but if the American people want me, I'm open to it.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Let's see now. Chris, obviously, I'm no scientist or meteorologist. I don't even want to pretend to be. Don't even want to pretend to know a lot about it. I have been following this debate politically for years, but for myself and members of our audience who may only have a cursory understanding of the matter at hand, why don't you explain to us, like we're third graders, the claims of those who say that human beings are destroying the planet by contributing to global warming?
Sure, sure. I'd be happy to. So first, I'd like to back up first of all and start with getting an accurate picture of what science is. And before that, I'm going to take a guess about the way you and your audience feel about this issue, and you tell me if it's correct or not.
Okay.
My guess is that most people don't know or care about climate science, and maybe they don't even care that much or read that much about science. And so they hear people in the news talking about this issue and they're not really qualified to give an opinion on it, but then everybody keeps barking about it. And so it's like this annoying thorn that you keep hearing about and you can't really respond to it. And it's just kind of right. It just stays around, right? Like that, like an annoying cold or something, allergy. And so what I'd like to do is just help people to get the basics down so that they're not just annoyed and not knowing how to deal with everybody barking about this issue.
Yeah, well, I think you're right on the money. Most of the people in my audience are conservative. We do have those with different viewpoints who listen in and are always welcome to call in. But conservatives, even if they don't know much about it, they're very bothered by the government regulations that use global warming as an excuse to strangle us. And for the more liberal people, I suspect even there that deep in their everyday lives, it's not that much of an issue to them. But yeah, at cocktail parties around the water cooler, when they're around certain friends or family at the Thanksgiving dinner table, they don't know much about it, and they just feel that the politically correct thing to do is to go along with the crowd.
Yeah, I think you're right. And so here's the first point I want to make. A lot of people don't realize this, but science doesn't ever prove anything. Science can give evidence for something. It could give arguments for something, but it never actually proves anything. In fact, there's lots of examples from history were things that even things that had a lot of evidence turned out to be wrong. For example, you could make an argument just by looking out your window that the world is flat. You could make an argument that the world does not move. You could make an argument that it looks like everybody's clock moves at the same rate. But all of those seemingly obvious claims turned out to be wrong ultimately.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because we know that the world is round now, and yet when we're walking around, we certainly feel like we're walking on flat surfaces. We're certainly not aware of any motion other than our motion moving. So that's a very good point, that the naked eye can be misled.
Right. And so what's the gold standard for science is what's called the scientific method. And basically, you want, if you can test things, if you could make a prediction and make a test that shows that prediction is borne out, then that's the gold standard, having that repeatability, that testability, that everybody that doubts any claim can test it. So that when people say this is scientific, why don't you believe it? That's the good stuff. That's the gold standard. Now, what causes confusion, and even with this issue causes confusion, is the fact that not all science is up to, there's a spectrum of things. Some things are more scientific than others, and some things cannot be tested. Everybody can't test it that doubts anything. So, for example, if we all were having a debate about whether Aristotle was left-handed or not, right, that's a little bit harder to test than whether the sun comes up every 24 hours. So that's what I mean. Some things are testable. Some things we can provide evidence, but not, we can't really test them like we can, you know, that the sun's going to come up or rocks fall to the ground if we let them go. And so that's a big part of the confusion, is when people say you're a denier of this science or that science. Well, no, not everything is as scientific as everything else. Obviously, nobody would doubt gravity because we can all see it. But with climate science, you have a situation where you're dealing with something, a system that's so complex that we can't really make nice, clean tests. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I've always understood that nothing is proven unless it's observable and repeatable. And even
right.
There, you've just given some examples of, well, it may observe to somebody like the world isn't moving. So even with observable, we've got to widen our viewpoint of what we're actually observing.
Right, right. So see, you've been well educated, so you know what good science is, but you also agree that there's some things that are so complex that it doesn't matter how many PhDs a person has, they just can't settle a question. Well, let me give you some examples. Are you surprised that we can't predict what the weather's going to be like a month from now? Does that bother you?
Yeah, usually I listen to what their prediction is and then just go with the opposite, and that's usually my accurate weather report.
Right. So we're the weather, I mean, I could go into details, but there's trillions upon trillions of atoms in the atmosphere, and it's so unimaginably complex that we're not surprised that the smartest people with the fastest computers can't predict the weather. Also, the stock market, you have millions of people transacting out of their own free will, and nobody can predict with certainty what's going to happen. We have no problem with the fact that we have to have humility with certain complex systems, certain complex questions. And that's point number one. That's what we're dealing with climate science. We have a situation where we can't actually settle the issue. Okay. And so now what you have is because we have to have this humility and admit that we don't know, that's where you have the potential for abuse, and politicians will act like they have certainty. And then some scientists will claim that they have certainty and use the mantle of their degrees to try to, by peer pressure and other means, try to convince us that we should believe something. But that's why we're in this mess. Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
it does. And I've always found it a pretty dubious argument when somebody points to a credential or a degree and says, well, then that person, he's an expert, because you can always find somebody with the same degree who offers a different opinion. So I don't care
right.
that people, I mean, I very much respect that you have a PhD in physics, but I would say to anybody, it's not that you have a degree and therefore you're saying this. I still want to know what your facts are. I still want to know what your data is. If it does
right.
fall under the category of evidence, that which points to a high probability that a given claim is true, then we need to admit that. We need to call it evidence. Would you agree that a lot of what we call facts are really well-substantiated hypothesis, that a lot of times that criteria of being repeatable and observable is not really met? And so we use the word facts when oftentimes we do just mean evidence, maybe good evidence, but evidence nevertheless.
Well, actually, I would go even farther, and I would define facts as well-substantiated hypotheses. That's all a fact is. We can't really be sure of anything. All we could do is provide well-substantiated fact.
So you would say even once we call it a fact, it can only be so factual.
We can. We always have to be honest and say that we could be wrong, right? Like my example of that the Earth is flat and the Earth doesn't move. We always have to be open to the fact that we could be wrong with our facts.
Well, then I'm guessing that with global warming, when Al Gore announced years ago that the debate was over, you would not agree.
Oh yeah,
with
no,
that.
That's just silly. So, and I mean, you can just from my examples of weather predictions, we know that there's a lot of things we don't know. And obviously, if we can't even predict the weather, how can we say with certainty what's going to happen 100 years from now?
But Chris, they gave him the Nobel Prize and the Academy Award for his Inconvenient Truth movie. He's got to be right. He's got those awards.
Yeah, well,
I've got two awards right up on my mantle.
So now let me, by the way, this is not the what you had me on, but let me just throw this out there for people to think about. But evolution, the theory of evolution itself, is one of those examples that doesn't follow the gold standard. We can't go back in a time machine and see what happened, right, hundreds of thousands of years ago to settle this question. And so that's why we present evidence, and then the other side will present evidence, and it's difficult to arrive, right, to settle this matter. So I wanted to get into a little bit of data, so I wouldn't be a respectable scientist if I didn't do that. So I gave you the general method of how scientists operate, and I showed you some of the limitations, and so I wanted to show you why there's this debate and controversy in the first place. So if you were to look at a graph of the average global surface temperature over the 20th century, you would see a rise. It would be a zigzag, so that it's very noisy. Sometimes the average temperature of planet Earth goes up, and then maybe a few years later it goes down, and so you have this zigzag trail, right, that gradually goes up. And so people look at that and say, well, I mean, gosh, it looks like the temperature's going up. Maybe we should be alarmed.
So it's like on a chart, you're seeing it going up and down and up and down and up and down, but progressively up as it goes?
Yes. Over the last 100 years, it's gone up. But here's the interesting thing. People have, you can zoom in on different time periods and make the data say whatever you want. So for example, yes, if you look at the last 100 years, it looks like it's going up, and we should be concerned about that. However, if you go back and you look at the last 1,000 or 2,000 years, you see that there were periods where it was hotter. It goes up and it goes down just like it has in the 20th century. But there's periods that were extremely hot. For example, in the medieval period. In the Roman period. And so people say, well, all this is due to industrialization, right? It's man-made, carbon dioxide.
Yeah, well, they didn't have those kinds of pollutants in ancient Rome. So are you saying that in those days it was even hotter than it is now?
So, no. So truth be told, the peak temperature in the last 100 years, the peak is higher than it has been in the last 1,500 years. However, if you look at data that goes back hundreds of thousands of years, then what it looks like is the temperature just on a very long scale, long meaning hundreds of thousands of years, it goes up and down, and we're just on a normal upswing.
Well, obviously, scientists believe we had an ice age and something melted that, and according to that belief of how old the world is, man was not around to be the one to melt it.
Right, on a long scale, long meaning hundreds of thousands of years, there's extreme peaks and then it gets cold and it gets hot again. And so if you compare it to data going back hundreds of thousands of years, there's nothing that looks very alarming about our current hot temperatures. Now, here's the interesting thing, talking just to show you how the data can be abused. Remember how I told you that the 20th century data was a zigzag? So if you look at the data from about World War II to the 70s, the trend was actually downwards for a few decades. I don't know if you knew that. And when I was a kid, I remember hearing there was alarm alarmist predictions that we were heading into a little ice age.
I did remember that years ago they were worried to think that the world was cooling, not warming.
That's correct. So in the 70s, there was a global cooling scare. And that's, again, because if you just look at the data for those 30 years after World War II, you can see that it looks like it's trending downward. Here's a quote from the New York Times, March 21st, 1975. It says, "Major cooling widely considered to be inevitable." And then Newsweek, April 28th, 1975, "Meteorologists disagree about the cause and extent of the cooling trend, but they're almost unanimous in the view that the trend will reduce agricultural productivity for the rest of the century."
Well, this was the 70s. Those magazines were probably talking about what great music disco was, too. So what did they know?
Okay, now we laugh. We say, oh, those foolish people in the 70s, but we're so much smarter now. Well, I nearly fell out of my chair when I read about this recent trend. Listen to this. There are some scientists now that are talking about a possible global cooling trend in the 2020s. What do you think? Have you heard of that?
That I had not heard, although I do know that the debate is open and not as many scientists as we're led to believe are climbing on board with global warming.
Yeah, so what's going on there, here's what people can search if they want more information. Search for the solar maximum. And what's happening is because of certain changes to sunspot activity, there is some scientists are predicting that the changes in the sun are going to cause the temperature to cool for a couple years in the 2020s. And so there's several scientific papers you can read on this that talk about this. So and why is that happening? Think back to what I said about that this climate is so complex that it's hard to make definitive statements. So some people say that carbon dioxide is the most important factor, but then these scientists will say no, the sun is a significant contributing factor. See, and they have debates, and it's hard to really settle this. So, yeah, when people say that they know for sure what's going to happen, I get skeptical.
So now, would you say, where do you fall in this camp? Are you not convinced that it's warming, or are you just saying we just don't really know as much as we think we know, and that you're kind of an agnostic
right.
on it?
Right. So here are some. Okay, now that we agree that it's a little bit more subtle and nuanced, it's not just whether it's warming or not. Here are some subtle questions that's not an easy. It's not easy to answer that. Let me show you some subtle questions that make that hard. So even if we agree that the surface temperature has risen, which I do, looking at the data in the last couple decades, how do we know that it's going to continue? So what? It's gone up for a couple decades, but how do we know that a decade from now it's not going to go down? I just told you some scientists are talking about a global cooling trend due to sunspot changes in the activity. So that's a question that Al Gore can't answer definitively. Also, even if you agree that it's going to go up or down, then what will be the effects of that? That's also a very difficult question. How is that going to affect the oceans, plant life? Some people even say increased carbon dioxide levels are a good thing. Plants need carbon dioxide. Maybe it'll turn a lot of deserts green. Is that necessarily a bad thing? That's a difficult question.
Well, and didn't Al Gore predict a while ago that the polar ice caps would be gone by a certain time, or at least significantly lower, and that hasn't actually happened?
Yeah. So, and there's been times in the past where the levels of the polar ice caps go up and down, and so that's, again, I'm not as alarmed about. It's always changing. Also, going back to my subtle question, so we don't know what the effects will be. We don't know if it's going to continue. And then, regardless of where you fall on this issue, there can still be debate on what the best response is. All right. So, for example, let's assume that in the next 100 years, it is really true, which is it's debatable that the ocean levels are going to rise. That may happen, it may not. Okay, if it does, it's going to happen very slowly over 100 years. It's not going to be Like, it's not going to be like this dangerous flood that's going to come in and just wipe out Miami. Okay, it's just going to happen slowly over several years, several decades. So if that happens, which, again, I'm not sure it's going to happen, what does that mean? That means that wealthy people that own beachfront property will just calmly sell it, take a loss, and have to move to other places. Does that really sound like the end of the world? Does that really sound like, you know, Armageddon if that happens?
Well, not to me, but then I'm not a senator trying to get reelected.
Yeah, so, and then another subtle question. So let's say that we do agree that it's increasing. What percent of that is due to man-made causes?
Right? Yeah, well, that was the other question I had, is that I know there's some people who maybe have the opinion that the warming is real, but they're not convinced that man necessarily has anything to do with it.
Right, or maybe man just has a very tiny, you know, fraction of 1%. Maybe just, you know, moving the needle just a little bit, but it was going to go in that direction anyway. So these are all questions that are very difficult to answer, that people don't have a nice, clean verdict on, the scientific community. And so, that's just keep all those things in mind when you hear people talking about this issue. So.
Okay, well, now, I know that sometimes when they go out, you hear all the time that the high majority of scientists accept this, but I've heard other people talk about how when they give out those polls, it depends on the kinds of questions. Can you say anything about how polls are maybe getting skewed when they go out and
right.
What would you say is the honest data on where scientists and meteorologists are on this?
So, okay, this is one that really gets my blood boiling. So there was someone named John Cook in 2013, and what he did was he analyzed a lot of publications, and he came to this statistic that over 97% of scientists agreed that humans are causing global warming. But if you look at the way he arrived at that number, it was really hokey. And he had the result he wanted to get. And if it wasn't clear what an opinion that a scientist had, he was, you know, pushing the data, pushing it to claim like more and more scientists believe in that 97% figure. And so then what happens is you get President Obama making quotes like this one in 2013, 97% of scientists agree climate change is real, man-made, and then dangerous. And even the Pope chimed in. Pope Francis in 2015 talked about climate change being a global problem with grave implications. And a lot of misinformation was based on Jim Cook's 97% claim, which has been discredited. So, yeah, so as far as now, when you ask, like, what do the scientists really agree, you also have to ask, are you talking about scientists in general or climate scientists? Because, again, not all scientists are climate experts. And so you can see that you have to be careful the data that you use to answer that question.
Well, and isn't it also true that in certain academic situations, a person could be in danger of losing his job if he doesn't climb on board, even though the university is supposed to be pushing the envelope and teaching people how to think instead of what to think?
Right. Then you get into motivations. And so then there's reasons why for the people might be motivated to make this issue, something bigger than it is. Politicians, they get money and power. Scientists get, you know, funding, grant proposals. And so, those are all things that we have to consider when people give their answers. And so, yes, it's a real mess.
Now, Chris, I've noticed that people seem to switch back and forth between the term global warming and climate change. During unusually hot summers or record heat, they'll say global warming. Then when we get record cold, I hear, oh, well, it's climate change. I'm not saying global warming. Now, I realize that to many scientists, those are just two different ways of talking about the same phenomena. But it seems that there are other people, perhaps the novices or self-proclaimed experts, that would you say there are some that conveniently switch the title between climate change and global warming, depending on what the weather actually is?
Right. What I remember I told you about the global cooling scare of the 1970s.
Right.
So I think what happened was some people realize that they don't really know what they're talking about and nobody can predict what the climate's going to do. So to cover their bases, instead of talking about global warming, right, they just talk about climate change.
Well, climate change is a sure bet, because one thing about the climate, it's always changing.
Right, exactly. That's right. So even everybody agrees with that. The climate's always changing. And what I noticed is that people, what you were saying, so whenever you have a hot day, whenever people get a sunburn, they say, oh, it must be because of global warming. Every you know, hot day, every odd weather event, they blame on global warming. And you can play the game, the people that are arguing against global warming can play the same game. In fact, here's a couple of random facts I can give you. The highest recorded temperature, world temperature, was in 1913 in Death Valley, California, 134 degrees Fahrenheit. So that was in 1913. So if it's warming, then why is the hottest temperature in 1913? Also, the coldest temperature ever recorded on planet Earth was in Antarctica on August 10th, 2010. It was 135.8 degrees Fahrenheit, below zero.
So when you say that we are having a record heat now compared to the last 100 years, you mean in the general trend, not an isolated matter such as what you were quoting with Death Valley?
Right. So the average, when you take the average, if you plot the average over the last several decades, you can see that it's trending up. But that doesn't mean that you can't have record cold spells. And remember, because I said the data is noisy, that it's a zigzag, right?
Exactly.
And so, but see, people don't admit that. Every time it's a hot day, they say, oh, see, global warming, we need to deal with this issue. And then we have, like we have this summer, back east, aren't we having record cold temperatures? And then President Trump says, oh, we need some global warming.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's having a field. I remember back in 2008, I was listening to the news, and there was a global warming rally scheduled outdoors in Australia, but they had to cancel the event because it was too cold outside. So you got to love it. Now, I hear people say today, and this gets back into the political part of it, global warming's a bigger threat than terrorism. Isn't this becoming almost like the story of Chicken Little, where we're saying the sky is falling?
Right. People have a vested interest. They have selfish reasons for wanting to make it bigger than it is.
Okay, and now, Chris, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, here's another thing I can throw out at you. So a lot of people will say, well, just to be on the safe side, shouldn't we all cut back on how much gas we use, just to be on the safe side, because we're dealing with planet Earth? Well, first of all, we always have to make trade-offs. We can't get out of that. Nobody walks around with a suit of armor because, well, you know, we have to be honest, it's possible somebody might swing a bat and hit us, right, every day you're walking down the street. So we always make trade-offs based on convenience, based on safety. And when we make these decisions about what to do about global warming, there's trade-offs. When you decide to cut back on energy usage, you will impact the economy, right? You will impact employment. Third world countries will be greatly impacted. For now, even people's survival will be affected. And so we have to consider those facts when we're deciding what to do about global warming.
Yeah. And if we're lowering our carbon emissions, but China isn't, then what good is that going to do anyway?
Right. Exactly. And so, here's the one thing you could press politicians about. So these people that want to claim that, the world is ending, okay, well, they're not really willing to come out and stick their neck and do what they, if their claims were really true, they would basically, we'd have to like outlaw cars or.
Well, and they wouldn't fly around on their private jets all over the world giving lectures about it. Aren't those private jets giving out emissions?
Yes. So they're not really willing to come out and risk their political career to say what they really would need to do if what they're claiming is going to happen, Armageddon, is really going to come true. So that's what we'd have to make the most painful cuts to our way of life And it would just slow down progress so much that, that's something to consider. And the poor would be affected greatly. Also, here's another thing to think about. So is there any doubt that in 100 years from now, we're going to have a moon base, we're going to be living on the, you know, living in outer space? Who knows what kind of technology we're going to have 100 years from now? Do you really doubt that if the temperature has risen a few degrees that we're going to have the technology to deal with it, right? Why don't we just let humans progress, let technology, let economies raise people out of poverty? And then if this is a problem, and that's a big if because we don't know for sure, but why don't we allow technology to find a solution 100 years from now?
Now, we've all heard, and again, this is coming from the point of view of the novice, we've all heard carbon emissions are related to global warming. Now, as a scientist, whether you buy that or not, can you explain to us, connect the dots, exactly how are the carbon emissions causing a warming according to that conventional wisdom? What scientifically is supposedly happening?
Sure. So I think what they're talking about is carbon dioxide, which is what we exhale. And there's other sources of carbon, man-made sources of carbon dioxide. But the thought is that carbon dioxide gets into the atmosphere, and then as the sun's radiation, as it reflects off the surface, less of it escapes back into space. So it's kind of like a greenhouse, right? A greenhouse traps heat in a small space so that plants can benefit. And so the carbon dioxide forms like a greenhouse, which traps a lot of the sun's radiation. And that's why they say that carbon dioxide leads to increases in temperatures.
Now, there's also concern about the deterioration of the ozone layer, but I've heard some people say that that's a separate concern. And then I've heard others say, well, it may be separate, but it's related to global warming. So how does that connect?
So the idea there is that chlorofluorocarbons, things that are released from man-made products, were destroying O3, or what's called ozone, in the atmosphere. And so that was... Well, but that's a completely separate concern from carbon dioxide emissions. But let me say a few things since you brought that up about carbon dioxide. So first of all, carbon dioxide is a natural chemical, okay, a molecule. Plants, the same way that we exhale carbon dioxide.
We inhale oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide.
Right. So there's even talk about the fact that if we were to decrease carbon dioxide levels, that it would actually threaten some plant species with extinction.
Right, because the plants are the reverse, right? They are inhaling carbon dioxide and then releasing oxygen. They're doing the opposite of what we're doing, correct?
Right. And so, having more carbon dioxide would actually benefit plants, and they would grow better. And they would thrive. And so this idea that carbon dioxide is like this, you know, weapon of mass destruction and this, you know, like toxic chemical that's going to kill the planet is just nonsense.
That is a very interesting way of looking at it. I had never heard before that argument, because the naturalists and naturists, they're always talking about plant life. And here's an argument for carbon dioxide and plant life, which seems very obvious with everything we've ever learned about plants, but you're the first person that I've heard phrase it exactly like that.
Okay, well, I'm happy to help. Also, carbon dioxide only makes up I don't know the exact percent, but it's a very, very tiny percent of the atmosphere. And there's debate about whether it's the major cause or contributor to increases in temperature. I already mentioned the sun and how people think that changes in the sun are going to make a cooling trend. So then, is it carbon dioxide that we need to be concerned about? Is it the sun activity, solar activity? So it's not how much carbon dioxide affects temperatures is something that's discussed. So.
Now, I have heard people talking not only about the kinds of cars we drive, the kinds of factories we build, but I'm hearing a lot of talk now about not eating hamburgers, and that somehow that CO2 contributes to global warming. Could you explain that one for us? The brilliant logic behind that one?
I've never heard of that one. I'm not sure how eating carbon hamburgers. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's supposedly related to our waste. We won't get into that. But boy, the day I stop having a Big Mac out of worry for global warming, that will be the day. Now, where do you think this is all headed, Chris? Well, if you were to look into the future, do you see less of a scare in the future? Do you see more of a scare in the future? Where are we headed with this debate?
Okay, so before I answer that, remember that the fact that nobody knows. Right. We learned from the last presidential election that nobody can predict the future very well. So with that said, what I think will happen is that there'll be a slight warming trend, but it won't be the end of the world like some people are claiming it's going to be. And it'll have some positive effects. And regardless of how much it warms and regardless of what the effects are, man being the innovative species that he is will figure out ways to deal with it, and life will go on. And I'm not really worried about it.
Now, you mentioned that you had spoken at a tea party with this kind of message and data. Tell us a little bit about that. Tea parties are very political by nature. I've been to a lot of tea parties. How did they hear of you? What was their interest in talking about this subject? Were they concerned about how much the government is abusing it and exploiting it?
Oh, so I volunteered to speak at it, and it was what I was guessing, right, that people have heard about this issue and they've seen people bark about it, but they don't really know them that much about it. So I just, as a public service, I just volunteered, and they had an opening in their schedule, and I volunteered to give the basics of it like I did to your audience. And that was how it started, and they were very polite and receptive, and it went well. I'm actually more interested now in if a Democratic group will have me. I'm actually more tempted now to do that because I kind of want some hostile questions and reactions from the audience to kind of just strengthen my delivery. But that's for the future sometime. I don't know if I'll be able to swing that.
Now, you mentioned that you've done some work for the Navy and for the government. What could you tell us about that? I realize that probably didn't have anything to do with climate change, but what could you tell us about that without having to kill us after we get the information?
Well, actually, some of my research does pertain indirectly. Let me explain how. So I did some research in magnetics for my PhD work, and what we would do is, again, there was these complex systems that we were studying, and so we would write I built a supercomputer. I wrote a program to run on a supercomputer, and so we'd make these really complex application software. But even there, I noticed that people would cut corners because in order to make your program not take 10 years to finish, they would make certain approximations for practical reasons. And so the reason I say that I think applies to this issue is because I know that those scientists that are running these software simulations of what's going to happen decades in the future, I know that they're making approximations because they have to. The climate is so complex.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.